Okay. Right. Morning. Today's daf in Chulin is Lamed Aleph. We are in the Mishnah on Lamed Amud Beis. Hashochei Beis Roshim Keachad. So Yishech two next at once. Okay. So for the purposes of conserving your energy and expediency. So okay. So you go ahead and Yishech two animals at once. The Mishnah says Shchitas Ukshera. So again, the tone of the Mishnah is that it's not the best, it's not ideal, but certainly it's not a shechita psula, shechita ksher, it's a good shechita. Shnai mochsim besakim v'shochtim, two people holding the knife. Now, if you remember yesterday's daf, so we know now that there are two ways to say over this Mishnah. The Amoraim are debating how to say over this Mishnah. One way to say the Mishnah over shnai mochsim besakim is that two people are holding two knives, and they're shechting the animal at the same time. And as we learned in yesterday's daf, the concern could be that each one is relying on the other person to do a proper shechita, so therefore it's no good. There's a diffusion of responsibility. That's one pshat. But a second pshat we saw yesterday is that two people are holding one knife. So like a saw, I don't mean that in terms of a serration. Remember, there's no serration on the knife, but like those big saws where they're, each one is holding an end and going back and forth in a synchronized fashion. So over here, we're having two people holding onto the knife. Here the concern would be that they're not working in synchronicity, and instead of going back and forth, they're going to be pushing down on the knife, and that means violating the psul of hadrasa. So that's another way to say over the Mishnah. In either way, the Mishnah's point is that it would be a good shechita. Afilo echel amala ve'echel amata shechita. So share the shechita would be a good shechita. Hitis is a rosh bevasach as psul. If you chop off the head, it's pasul. Chopping off the head meaning that you're going in with a forceful motion, with a forward thrusting motion, so that's no good. That's the psul of dores, and therefore the shechita is a shechita psula. Hayashochi vehitis is a rosh bevas achas. Now, let's say you're going in a back and forth motion, and you happen to go all the way through the neck. So that's okay. Now, im yesh besakim lo tzav k'shera. Now, as long as the knife is long enough. And the point of the Mishnah over here is as follows, meaning as we're going to learn in just a moment in the Mishnah itself, going in a back and forth motion is the way that's traditionally done. You can even make an argument, it's the preferable way to do it. But in other words, it doesn't have to be back and forth. As long as you're going in a slicing motion, so then it doesn't have to be back and forth. It could be going in one direction, that would be enough. However, and this is what the Mishnah just cautioned us, the knife has to be long enough. In other words, you have to know that the knife is long enough so that if I'm going in one direction and doing it in one slice, the knife is going to be long enough where it's going to be cutting both pipes, the totality, or at least the majority of both of the pipes. So, the Mishnah describes it as being melot savar. It has to be the length of a neck, meaning that's the total length of the knife, or is that extra? Stay tuned. The Gemara is going to explain. Hayashochi v'hitis beis roshim. I know it's what he said, and it's because the Gemara is going to say it. In other words, we're going to see it inside the Gemara. Hayashochi v'hitis beis roshim b'vas achas. If let's say you shecht and you're shechting two animals, imesh b'sakim melot savar echa k'shera. So once again, the Mishnah makes the same point that if I'm going to be using one knife to shecht two animals, so the knife has to be the length of one neck. Now you and I know it doesn't mean one neck. It can't be. Sure. It at least has to be double. Right. So once again, stay tuned. The Gemara is going to be discussing this. Now that's only if you're deciding to go in one motion. Right. But if you're going in a back and forth motion, so then the knife could be any knife. It could be this. It could be a scalpel. It could be the smallest knife, as long as it's a flat blade. And even if it's an izemel, and izemel is some sort of really small knife that was popular back in the day. So kshera, the shechita would be a kasher shechita because once you're going in a back and forth motion, so then there is no minimum length of the knife, as long as it's a knife. What if it's a needle point? Stay tuned, the Gemara is going to ask that question and give a definitive response to that question as well. Mostly definitive. Okay. Minan and Mili, the Gemara wants to know, how do I know? Explains Rashi that you need to be going in a back and forth motion. So the pasuk in Yirmiyahu, now it's the first time in the Masechta that we quoted this pasuk. So the pasuk describes the shechita being like an arrow. Now, of course, the nature of an arrow is that the arrow is being shot with a tremendous amount of force, and it's slicing through whatever it cuts. So that gives you the idea that it must be a slice. It cannot be a direct pressure going right across. So according to the Brice of Rabbi Shmuel, the very nature of the word v'shachat tells us that it has to be mashicha, has to be drawn. It has to be something where it's in a slicing motion. V'cheinu omer zahav shachut. So v'omer chei shachut l'shona mir madiber. So in the Brisa, they quote two other psukim that also describe this idea that it has to be in a drawing motion, a slicing motion. The pasuk in Malachim, where the gold that was used was gold that was zahav shachut. The gold was drawn out. It was hammered. It was drawn out. And the pasuk in Yirmiyahu, which we already described. Now, my va'omer. Now, you know how this works. It happens all the time. Whenever we quote multiple psukim in order. Oh, okay, good. Okay. Oh, I was worried. Okay, breakfast is being served. Okay. Now, the Gemara wants to know, why quote the multiple psukim v'chitim azav shachud shinit v'kachud hu? So the Gemara says, now I don't understand. Zahav shachud may be understood that it is spread, it's spun out like thread. So tashma chushachud l'shanam, so that's why the pasuk Yirmiyahu gives us with absolute clarity that no, what it means is that it is cutting with a slicing motion. Now, the story which also was quoted in yesterday's presentation, the Gemara quotes that Rav Ahava Badik Legira L'Rabbi Yonah Bar Tachlifa. Rav Yonah Bar Tachlifa was a shochet and an archer. And he took his two skills and he combined them together. And so now with his expertise in archery, so he takes an arrow, he's going to shoot at a bird, and he's going to shech the bird. Now, but first, the first things first, though, however, Bedika, we learned earlier in the Masechta, that in order for a shochet to shech with his knife, the first thing he has to do is present the knife to the Rav so that the Rav gives the examination, gives the bedika. And as we learned earlier in the Masechta also, this is also part and parcel of kavod harav that you have to have for your Rav of your community. So good, so he gives it to his Rav and he shows it to his Rav. And so Rav Yonah Bar Tachlifa gives it to Rav to check. Rav checks the arrow and makes sure that the arrow has no pegima. Good. V'shacha ba'ufa ba'hadid deparach. And now aims at the bird, shoots at the bird, shechs the bird. The Gemara has a lot of follow-up questions. And by the way, while the bird was in flight. Okay, so just talking about his ability of being a marksman. Phenomenal, fantastic.
But the arrow is pointy, so it pierces, it doesn't cut it.
Well, so the Gemara is going to have a lot of follow-up questions. Let's see the Gemara's questions inside Vidilma. So the Gemara says, so how about Avid Chalada? How do I know that the arrow first went from the outside of the neck and then cut its way through the neck? Because if the arrow would have gone through the neck first and then cut the simanim, that's what's called chalada. We just discussed this in yesterday's daf. So if the knife were to go through the neck and cut the simanim while being covered and not being exposed at all times, that is a psul of chalada. So maybe that's what happened with the arrow. And how do I know? So the Gemara says, I'm sorry, chazinan. The Gemara's answer is going to be forensics. We're going to take a look at the bird afterwards, and we're going to forensically see the bird and see that it first came in from the outside in. How do I know that? So I bet you that if we were there and we would understand the nature of the cut and the bird and the feathers, I think we'd understand this a lot better. All we get is just one line of Gemara, so we got to just try our best. So the Gemara says not even one line of Gemara. It's Chazinan Gidfei Dimiparme. We got three words in the Gemara. So basically, we're going to look at the feathers and we're going to see that the feathers are cut. And again, I think the visualization over here would be much better for all of us to understand. But basically, if I could try to recreate over here the forensics, so basically the cut is coming in through the feathers so that it is clear indication that the knife came and first cut the feathers, then cut the neck, then cut the samanim. So everything was done from the outside going in. Okay. Kisui. Now the Gemara says, now I have another problem, another follow-up question. Mitzvah Kisui Adam. We're going to be spending an entire parak in our Masechta learning about the mitzvah of Kisui Adam. Comes up much later on the Masechta. Anyway, so the mitzvah of Kisui Adam, after you shech, there's a mitzvah to cover the blood. And so sixth parak of the Masechta. Yep. And this is true by Ophos and Chayos. Birds and wild animals. Behemoth, there's no mitzvah of Kisui Adam. But we're talking about a bird over here, and there's a mitzvah to cover the blood, and I don't understand. So how is he going to cover the blood? The Gemara says, V'chitema demichzelei. What do you mean? How is he going to cover the blood? He'll find the blood. In other words, obviously, as he shot the arrow at the bird, and he shechted the bird, so the blood spilled out right there. It must have landed on the ground, something called gravity. And so he's going to find the blood and he's going to cover it. The Gemara says, yeah, but that's insufficient. So the halacha is, we're going to see this in the sixth parak, but we're seeing it now, and that is that it has to be in dirt. The halacha of kisui dam demands, it requires, there has to be dirt below, there has to be dirt above, there has to be sandwiched, the blood has to be the center, the middle piece of a sandwich, of a dirt sandwich, with dirt below and above. In fact, the bracha is bi'afar. We actually include this halacha in the bracha itself. So the so how do you do that? So the Gemara says, well, it's actually very simple. What Rabbi Yonah did before he shot the arrow is that he designated all the dirt in the valley to be dirt that's going to be the bottom dirt of the kisui, of the dam. So that means to say now that he designated it, there seems to be this idea that there has to be some hazmana, some designation of the dirt. So he designates all the dirt of the field. And now when that blood receives when the blood falls on the dirt, that's the afar lamata. Then when he finds the blood, he's going to put dirt on top of it. Okay. So the Gemara now is satisfied with the shechita being a kosher shechita.
It's like a lot of water.
Yeah, right.
It's a valley. Talking about a valley, not even a...
Agreed. Okay. Doesn't seem to be an efficient way to shech, but okay, that's what he did. Hayashochi vehitiz. Okay, now Amar Rabbi Zera Malot Zaver v'Chutzah Zaver. So here's what we're first. We start off with a statement by Rabbi Zera in terms of the minimum length requirement of a knife. Number one, Rabbi Zera says it's Malot Zaver v'Chutzah Zaver. We do not mean that the length of the knife is going to be exactly the diameter of the neck of the animal. It has to be more than that. Good. Well, we're almost there. We're not there yet. So it has to be more than that. So it's Malot Zaver v'Chutzah Zaver. So it's going to be now the diameter of the neck, and it's going to be more than that. Now, follow-up question. When Rabbi Zera says it has to be more than that, how much more? Ibailu, Malot Zaver v'Chutzah Zaver k'Malot Zaver, Davlu Trei Zavare. One option is that it has to be the diameter of the neck plus another diameter of the neck, otherwise known as two times the length of the neck. Odilma, Malot Zaver v'Chutzah Zaver mashahu, or maybe no. Maybe the only requirement is it has to be just simply more than the neck. In other words, if you look back at the statement of Rabbi Zera, he just simply says, Malot Zaver v'chutz l'tzavar. And maybe just chutz just simply means a little bit more than the neck. So Tashma, the Gemara says, I know the answer. We're going to go back to our Mishnah. Hayashoch v'etishne rashim b'vasachasim yeshtosakim Malot Zaver echad kasher. When the Mishnah now describes how you're going to be lining up two animals neck to neck, right? And you're going to be taking a knife, as long as the knife is one neck length, so then you're good. Now that's how you read the Mishnah. There's no way you can understand the Mishnah the way I just read it. No way. My Malot Zaver, Echad, the knife is now only one neck length? Can't be. Ilem Malot Zaver, Echad, V'sula, O'hashab, Behema, Achaz, Binan, Malot Zaver, V'chutzah Zaver, B'shem, Behema, Sagile, Kem Malot Zaver, Echad? Because now we arrive at an impossible conclusion. For one animal, the knife has to be a neck length and then more. And then for two animals, it's good enough if you have a knife of one neck length. It can't be. It's an impossible pshat. So, Ella, pshita, malot zaver, chutz l'shnei tzavarim, shmamina, malot zaver, chutz l'tzavar, shmamina. It must mean that what the Mishnah is telling us is that when I have the animals lined up, two animals neck to neck lined up together, so what is that one neck length of the knife? That's the additional, that's the hosafa. So that means to say that, of course, the knife itself is two neck lengths, and then you're going to add another one. So that means that the hosafa has to be one additional neck length. So that means that for two animals, it's three neck lengths. That means that for one animal, it's two neck lengths. Shema mina. The Gemara says this is, in fact, the pshat. So that means to say, like the halacha is, like Rabbi Ben David told us yesterday at the presentation. So that means to say that whatever the animal is that you're shechting, you're going to take the typical neck length of that animal, you're going to multiply it by two, and that has to be the length of the chalaf. The chalaf has to be double the average of whatever you're shechting. Now, In the Mishnah, we describe that you're shechting with an izemel, meaning the smallest knife. It's like a scalpel. And as long as it doesn't have karnayim. Karnayim, some sort of protrusions. Rashi says it was really popular in the day, I guess today as well, but it was really popular in the day that they would put some sort of decorative protrusions on the edges of the knife. You see the Rashi ain lo karnayim? Rashi de regilim hayulasos kimin karnayim leizmelim lenoi al gabayim matin letzad roshan. Umitokshu katan ma'od hu nishmat min etzavro kishu molech umevi yeshlachush shem yachalidu asimanem o yinakvo osamar karnayim. So there was these decorative ends to these small little scalpels back in the day. Very popular, says Rashi. And what happens is that if I shech with these small little scalpels, so the blade itself obviously is good. But if I go too far and I catch it with one of the decorative ends of the knife, so then we're in jeopardy of passeling the shechita, because we're going to be tearing at the siman and not cutting the siman, and that's the psul. So if you're going to be using a small scalpel, it has to be without the karnayim. So Amalei Rav Acha Breda Rav Avila Rav Nasha Machtemai. Okay. Now what about the point of a needle? A needle point. So we are saying now that it could be the smallest blade, even something as small as an izemel. So the Gemara now wants to push the envelope. What about if I use just now the point of a needle? Is that okay? So Amalei Machta Mivza Baza. So an immediate dismissal of that suggestion. You can't cut with a needle point. You know it's going to tear at the simanim, and we don't want tearing. We want cutting. So the Gemara says, "Machta dushpachemai." Okay, but let's. Okay, it's fine. So I pushed the envelope too far. But how about this? How about if we talk about the needle point used by the tanner? The tanner, the ushkapi. Right, that was the shoemaker back then. So in other words, so the tanner, so he would work with a needle. It was a larger needle. So it wasn't needle point. It was more like what you and I describe it like as an awl, A-W-L. Okay, whatever. A little bit bigger. So my. So I'm like tanino, afilu kol shehu. So he says over there, I think it's okay, because our Mishnah said afilu kol shehu. So my lav machta dushkape. So the Gemara says, presumably we're including even this instrument. The Gemara says, lo izemo. The Gemara says, no, it has to be a blade. It has to be a flat blade. It can't be something which is pointy in nature. So he's Emma Badger Katani Law. So the Gemara says, I don't think that's correct Pshat in the Mishnah, because the Mishnah actually says izemel. So you're telling me that when the Mishnah says Afilu Kol Shehu, it's talking about izemel, but the Mishnah also includes that as well. The Gemara says, no, Perusha Kamefarish. No, here's how you read the Mishnah. The Mishnah actually is acting as a perish on itself, meaning Kol Shehu izemel. When the Mishnah says Kol Shehu, it's actually going back on the izemel, meaning the izemel, the scalpel itself, could be a Kol Shehu, but it has to be a flat blade. It cannot be something pointy in nature. Hachinami Mesabah, the Gemara says, I'll tell you what, this is in fact really the better pshat. Why? Is akadacha mate dushkape, hashamach mate dushkape shar izemel mibaye. The Gemara says, and I know this is a better pshat because, consider, if in fact we're talking about the point of an awl, and that you could use for shechita. So now imagine, if we can go so far to say the biggest chiddush, which is the point of an awl, is used for shechita, so then now you need to tell me about an izemel? Meaning the whole point of the Mishnah, we've said this many times, and it's such an important yesod to realize when learning Mishnayos. The Mishnah is providing for us the biggest chiddush. If the biggest chiddush is that I could use an awl, some sort of pointy instrument, so then the Mishnah would not be telling me izemel, because that's far away from the biggest chiddush of the Mishnah. So it seems clear now that by virtue of the fact that the Mishnah says izemel, that's the limit of the smallest instrument that you could use to shech, meaning it has to be a flat blade, it has to be some sort of scalpel-like flat blade surface, it cannot be a pointy instrument. So the Gemara says, no, izemel it's terichlei. The Gemara says, I'll tell you like this, I'll say to you that when the Mishnah says Kol Shehu, it's talking about a pointy instrument. And still, I need the Mishnah to teach me izemel. Why? Because remember what we learned just a couple moments earlier? Popular back in the day is that your izemels had decorative ends to them. And so therefore, if we allow the izemel to be used, Well, people will be using all types of izemel, and the popular izemel of the day was ones that had decorative protrusions coming out at the ends of the izemel. And even if the awl would have been good, this pointy instrument of the awl, I could have made the argument that the awl would have been good, but the izemel's not good. Why? Because it has karnayim. Typically, they have karnayim. And that would tear at the simanim, and that wouldn't cut the simanim. And so, even if you want to tell me that the Mishnah is talking about the awl of the tanner, still, the point being, that the izemel still would be a chiddush in of itself. So, conclusively, the Gemara does not eliminate the awl to be used, but it sounds like, from the tone of the Gemara, it sounds like we're just saying this as a dichui. We're just, you know, we're just simply suggesting this as a pshat in the Gemara, but it sounds like from the Gemara that it has to be a flap blade, as long as you're going back and forth, so there is no minimum length requirement of the blade, but it has to be a blade.
Why aren't we bothered by the fact that the arrow is also pointy? I don't understand how the arrow is supposed to be like a blade.
That's, I'm telling you, if we had a visualization, I think it would be much better, because you and I have mental images of what the arrow looks like, and I don't know if you're right, you don't know if I'm right. I don't know what you're, I mean.
It's pointy, but the side.
Okay, right. It's the kind of thing where if we, it's like yesterday. Once you see it, then you're like, yeah, you understand it so much better.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I know, it was fantastic.
Somebody took a video, I hope?
Yeah, the whole thing was videoed yesterday. I'm sorry, just to include the listener into what we're discussing. Yesterday, the Rabbi Ben David, the author of Sichas Chulin, so he came to our shul yesterday, and he did a two-hour demonstration. He could have gone another 2 hours. He did a two-hour demonstration where he dissected the entire goat from top to bottom, and really just it was a clear demonstration of what Shechita looks like. All of us are just a little bit smarter.
He knows quoting inside
and yeah, yeah.
Inside
yeah, yeah, yeah. It's his expertise. He knows it. Okay.
It's like this.
Yeah. The Mishnah on Lamed Aleph. Lamed Aleph, we are now starting with the big sugya of today, although we already covered our first big sugya of today, but the big sugya of today, and that's Kavanah. Okay, so when you shechtu, what kind of kavana do you need? Now, whenever we talk about kavana, so remember, let's tone it down in terms of kavana. sorry. I'm such a lidbach. I apologize. But in other words, we're not talking about the lofty thoughts that one has and all the special kavanas that are said. We're just simply talking about intentionality. We're talking about knowing what you're doing, being in the moment, and just simply being aware of, hey, I'm shechting an animal, and not mindlessly simply cutting or throwing a knife or doing anything without your head in the game. We're just simply talking about the most basic kavana of knowing and thinking about what I'm doing. And over here now, by the way, Todd, they smell unbelievable. it's distracting. Okay, so so we're just, when we're talking about kavana, so we're talking about just simply having intent of what you're doing. And so what we're going to be learning together now in the course of our next sugya for today, we're not going to finish it today, but we'll get through a good part of it. This sugya goes into tomorrow's daf, and that is, what kind of kavana, if any, do I need when I shecht an animal? So the Mishnah here talks about the following, naflasak and v'shachta. So the Mishnah over here talks about the knife falling. Now when we're talking about when the Mishnah is describing a scenario in which the knife is falling, it just simply means, like, it just fell. Meaning, maybe somebody bumped into the table, maybe not even, we don't even need that. In other words, the wind came and just blew the knife and the knife fell. So in other words, there was simply no human input whatsoever in the projection of the knife. The knife just went as a projectile. And it shechted. Afa pisha shechita sokadarka psula. Now, if everything went well physically, but over here it's no good. Why? Shenemar v'zavachta v'achalta mashata zavecha ta'ochal. The Torah, when describing the act of shechita, says v'zavachta, which means that you need human input. There has to be a koach adam in the act of shechita. If shechita occurs without a koach adam, so then it's no good. Now, all this should sound familiar to you. We've done something very similar to this. About a week ago, approximately, more than a week ago, where we talked about the wheel and the turning of the wheel, and the Gemara earlier described where, if it's koach adam, we made a distinction, if you remember, in the Gemara earlier about koach rishon versus koach sheni, right? The first turn, the second turn, Okay, wow, this goes back some time. Anyway, sorry.
Rebound of a knife.
Right? So, but right now, the point actually here is really simple. What we're doing is we're just making a very simple distinction between no human input versus human input. No human input, the shechita is no good. With human input, the shechita is good. Ah. Now, you'll notice, by the way, as we just learned the Mishnah really carefully, that where do we turn the halacha from being no good to good? All we need now is just human involvement, meaning we need the physical action of a human. What about his mind? Do we need his mind as well? If I read the Mishnah, and again, I go back to the premise that I raised earlier. The Mishnah is telling us the biggest chiddush. The biggest chiddush is I just simply need human involvement. I need a human to do the action. So now, if I'm reading the Mishnah really carefully, it sounds like from the Mishnah, I only need koach, but I don't need kavana.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. I like the way we just read the Mishnah. More importantly, the Gemara likes the way that we read the Mishnah. So, time of denafla. Hahi pila hu kshera. So, where is the turn of the Mishnah? So it's because the knife fell with no human involvement, with no koach adam. So hahi pila, once there's koach adam, so then it would be a good shechita. But again, the part that we have to really be attentive to, the sensitivity over here is the idea that all I need is koach adam. I don't need anything more than his koach. I don't need his moach. Okay, I just thought of that on the spot. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I'm here all day. Now, that's not true. I'm not here all day. And even though there's no kavana. So, mantan lo bein and kavana. Now, the Gemara says, now, where do I know that I don't need kavana l'shchita? I'm a Rava Rabbi Nassani. So, Rava now tells us that it is the shita of Rabbi Nassan. Meaning, this question of whether or not shchita works with or without kavana is a machlokes ha-tanaim. And interestingly enough, our Mishnah, which indicates, doesn't say, but indicates that you don't need kavana. So Rava now is connecting that to the shita of Rabbi Nassan. Let's say, right now, your only interest is I have my knife in my hand, I'm throwing it at the wall, and I don't know, we're playing darts, let's say. Not darts, but you understand. Meaning, right now, all I'm interested in is just throwing the knife at the wall. And lo and behold, by accident, an animal then hits an animal that's right there. And I have no intention for that whatsoever. Rabbi Nassan Machshir, the Chacham and Poslim. So Rabbi Nassan says that it's kasher, Rabbi Nassan says that it's pasul. So clearly over here, there's a machlokus between Tanayim. And interestingly, Rabbi Nassan is a das yachid. He's the minority position over here, where if I were to shecht an animal mindlessly, meaning I'm providing all the koach, but there's no kavana whatsoever, so then Rabbi Nassim says it's good, and the Chachamim say it's no good. So over here, what we have clearly is a machlokas ha-tanayim. What Rava, just give me one moment, what Rava now is doing is, he is taking our Mishnah, interpreting our Mishnah, and connecting it to Rabbi Nassan. Because our Mishnah doesn't really say that no intention is okay, but the deek in the Mishnah, however, is very good. Because the Mishnah says that the knife fell with no human koach. So that means then, this is Rava's deek in the Mishnah. If there's human koach, but there's no intention, there's no kavana, so then it would be fine. And Rava now is linking it to Rabbi Nassan, so that now our Stam Mishnah is going like Rabbi Nassan. And give me one more moment. Hu tanila v'hu amarla halachika Rabbi Nassan. And on top of that, he says that's in fact the halacha. Now it works out well, by the way, because it comes out that a Stam Mishnah is also going like Rabbi Nassan. Normally, yachid v'rabim halachika rabim. But over here now, it's not only Rabbi Nassan, but it's also Stam Mishnah as well. Good. Yes.
If mitzvahs don't need kavanas, then why do we?
How does this? Okay, good. Rabbi Zimmerman wants to know now. How does this fit into the general discussion of mitzvahs shrichas kavana or mitzvahs ain't shrichas kavana? It's a wonderful question. If time permits, I'll discuss a little bit. But it's a big question.
Is shechita considered a mitzvah?
Is shechita considered a mitzvah? The Rambam counts it as one of the 613 mitzvahs. We know in the beginning of the Masechta, not everyone agrees to the Rambam, right? It's a machlokes amongst the Rishonim. Whether or not it's a mitzvah or not, the Rambam counts it as one of the 613.
For those who don't consider a mitzvah, there's no point in there.
It's just a matir. And then is there any kavanah requirement by a matir? I'm so happy you asked that question. We're going to see in the upcoming daf, the answer may in fact be yes.
Mitzvah in general doesn't require intent.
Mitzvahs require, whether mitzvahs require intent or not, is a constant machlokas throughout the Gemara,
right,
of whether mitzvahs shrichas kavana or mitzvahs do not require kavana. And over here, how does this play into that larger discussion? That's Rabbi Zimmerman's question. It's a very big question. Okay, it's a very good question. It's a very big question. The ha'amar of Echad HaZimna. Now the Gemara says, now wait one second. Here I'm confused and bothered by the following. And that is that Rava already reported this information to us earlier. Did none. Let's go back to Mishnah number one of our Masechta. Now, in the Mishnah's example, you had Echere, Shote V'Katan, people who are incapable of Kavana, and if they Shechta, as long as somebody is overseeing and supervising and making sure that the act was good, so then the Shechita would be a good Shechita. V'amrina, mantana, delo by Kavana, the Shechita V'ama, Rava, Rabbi Nasanhi. Now, again, Rava on that Mishnah, same Rava, different Mishnah. Rav on that Mishnah says, you know who that Mishnah is? That Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Nassan. Rabbi Nassan says that Shechita does not require Kavana. So, what the Gemara is bothered by, and this is the way Rashi's understanding, is not so much the Mishnayos, because you can learn the Mishnayos how you learn the Mishnayos. The Gemara is bothered by Rava, because Rav is basically using every opportunity, granted there are only two of them, but Rav is using every opportunity to say, hey, that's Rabbi Nassan. Hey, that's Rabbi Nassan. And why is Rava repeating the position twice over, meaning wouldn't once be enough? The Gemara says, no, both times are necessary. Tzricha. The Gemara says, let's draw some basic distinction between the two cases. Let's first start off with our case. In our case, so the person is throwing the knife, and he is interested in a chaticha, meaning he's looking for to make a cut. It just happens to be not shechita. But in other words, but there is some intentionality, and there's some kavana, a kavana for chituch. Okay. But in the first case, we're talking about somebody who is incapable of kavana. So in other words, there literally is no intention whatsoever. It's zero kavana. Okay. So the Iyashwin Hachim Mishim Dekasim Mikoch Mendas. Aval Hasam, sorry. I'm sorry. I see my mistake. Okay, good. Now I got it cleared. In the first Mishnah, sorry, there was an intent to cut an animal. Sorry. In the first Mishnah, there was an intent to cut an animal. And so there, you can make the argument that, okay, there was no kavana, but at least the intent to cut the animal, even though there was no kavana for shechita. Over here, he was just throwing the knife at the wall. There was not even an intention to cut. Fine. And then flip it around. So, V'i Ashminan Hacha Mishim Dekasi Mikoch Mendas. Ava Hasan Delokasi Mikoch Mendas Emelo Tzricha. And over here, at least the person who's throwing it has capability of Kavana. In the first Mishnah, where it's Chereshot V'Katan, not even capable of Kavana. So maybe we can draw a distinction there as well. So that's why Rava has to keep pointing to both of the Mishnayos and pointing out and highlighting that in both Mishnayos, Kavana is not a requirement. And again, what Rava's pointing out is that we know it's a machlokas, meaning we just learned the Braisa together. We know it's a machlokas whether Kavana is required or not required. And Rabbi Nassan says Kavana is not required. By the way, of course, just state the obvious. Rabbi Nassan would love it if we had Kavana, meaning it's not saying that you should be mindless. In other words, b'di'avad, it would be a good shechita if you shecht it without kavana. And the Mishnah here and our daf on Lamed Aleph and the Mishnah on daf Beis Lamed Aleph both point to the direction of Rabbi Nassan. Rava says both of them are holding like Rabbi Nassan. Okay. Itmar. Nida shenensa v'tavla. Okay. Now, as long as we're on the topic of kavana, so here now we begin a discussion in the Gemara regarding other areas in halacha where kavana was not had. A woman had just finished her nida. She is now ready to tovel in the mikvah, but she tovel in the mikvah, but she did so forcibly. Someone forced her into the mikvah. Okay, so in other words, whatever exactly the case was, she toveled in the mikvah with no kavana. Okay, good. V'tavla. So Amrav Yudam Rav Tahor LeBeis Avasur Lechel B'Truma. Now, a woman as going from the state of being a nida to a non-nida, meaning for her tahara process, so it will affect her in multiple ways. One is that she can now be with her husband. A woman is a nida, cannot be with her husband by Isser Kares. And a woman, after she tovels in the mikvah, is now can be with her husband in the state of Heter. So that's one. Two is now she's allowed to eat kachim. Prior, while she was a nida, she was obviously in a state of tumah. She can't eat kachim. Now that she is toveled in the mikvah, she can now eat kachim. So listen to the first psak of the Gemara, Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Tahor LaBeis of Asur Lechol B'Truma. So Rav Yehuda quotes his first Rebbe Rav saying that she can be with her husband, but she can't eat Truma. So in other words, was the toveling in the mikvah, the mindless tvila in the mikvah, was it effective? So the answer is yes and no. Yes and no. For her husband, yes, but for Truma, no. Now we have to think about that, and we have to... Huh? Ah, good. Good.
These are not mitzvot.
Good. Right? Wait. Just one second. I'm ready to discuss. Let's first see all the factors, all the opinions first. Rav Yochanan ma'afla beis lo tahara, and Rav Yochanan says that unequivocally the tefillah did not work. Rav Yochanan says that the tefillah has to be a mindful tefillah. There has to be kavana, and without kavana, the tefillah does not work at all. Not for truma, not labesa. So Amale Rav LeRav Nachman LeRav Damar Tahara LeBeis Vasula Echa B'Truma. So Rav and Rav Nachman are now discussing specifically the opinion of Rav, and basically we have such a hard time wrapping our head around the opinion of Rav. She could be with her husband, but she can't eat truma. Of those two, had she been Anida, which would have been worse? Now, when I say which one would have been worse, we're talking strictly from the standpoint of Onish. Which one comes with it a harsher onesh? Being with her husband. Being with her husband in Isser Kares. Eating truma while tamei, or in this case, tamei'ah, is a misa bidei shamayim. One grade lower, one drop lower than that of an Isser Kares. So you're telling me, this is hard to understand, that she can be with her husband, a tefillah below kavana can be with her husband, which is an Isser Kares, had the tefillah not worked. But meanwhile, she can't eat truma, which is misa bidei shamayim, only misa bidei shamayim. I'm speaking obviously relatively. It's only misa bidei shamayim had the tefillah not worked. So you're allowing Yisra Karis, and you're forbidding misa bidei shamayim? Very difficult to understand. Alman Karis hutra isra misa mibaye. So amr le bala chulin hu v'chulin lo bai kavana. And the Gemara says, yeah, but you're looking at it from the wrong perspective. Meaning, yes, you're right, but you have to take the following into consideration. For her to be with her husband, that's chulin. Now, when we say chulin, you understand. We're speaking here strictly relatively. Right. A chulin just simply means it is not a carbon-related halacha. In other words, in halachas, there's chulin, there's kachim. In fact, we're learning chulin right now. Chulin just simply means it's not part and parcel of the Beis HaMikdash. It's not involved with karbanos and anything that is kodesh per se. So, when it's something that reflects and relates to chulin, no kavanah is required. So, but when it relates to karbanos, so you need an element of kavana. There has to be more kavana when it comes to carbon-related matters. Chuma is carbon-related, even though you're allowed to eat chuma outside of the azar, but still, it's kodesh, it's more susceptible to tuma, it is carbon-related, and so therefore there needs to be kavana. So it's so interesting what we're saying now. It's one tefillah b'mikvah. In other words, and was that effective for her? So for matters of chulin related, that are chulin related, yes, because I don't need kavana. But for matters that are kachim related, no, because you need kavana bedavar. Again, all this is according to the opinion of Rav. Rav Yochanan fundamentally disagrees. He says no, that a tefillah without kavana does not work bechlal. The Gemara continues. Now, how do I know that this is in fact so? When it comes to chulin, I don't need kavana. So we learned the following Mishnah: Galshan it lashubar arba'im sa v'nafa ala hadam v'ala kelim tahorim. So this Mishnah mikvahs, which we've seen already a couple of times, the Mishnah is mentioned back in Chagiga, and it's a fun Mishnah. So you're going to tovel through a wave. Now, ocean obviously is a body of water; it's a natural body of water, and obviously you could tovel in the ocean. And over here now we're talking about a wave and. To let's make the chiddush even better. Let's even detach the wave from the ocean. So in other words, but still, it's part and parcel of the ocean. And so therefore, if the wave has a requisite amount of water, 40 sa'ah, so then this would be an effective tefillah for both you and for Kalim. Now the Mishnah over here in Mikvah says that it's a good tefillah for both you and Kalim. Now why does it mention Adam v'Kalim? Now the easiest reason why is because it's true. It works for both. But what the Gemara wants to do is it wants to go one step further. And that is as follows. So, my love, Adam dumi de kelim. Ma kelim de la mechavne, Adam namilo by kavana. So the Gemara says now, Isn't it interesting that Adam and Kalim are mentioned together? And what the Gemara now is suggesting is, I'll tell you why. Because we know that Kalim, of course, being an inanimate object, so they don't have Kavana. And by grouping together Adam together with Kalim, that means that the Tevila works just like the Tevila works for Kalim, even though there's no Kavana. So too, the Tevila is going to work for Adam, even though the person doesn't have Kavana. In other words, he's Kli-like, mindless. Me, my Dama, Biyoshevim, and stop asking, and the Gemara says, how do I know? How do you know? Maybe the Mishnah is describing a person who is standing there, ready to be washed in the wave. And asking an Emasayitala Shagal, and he's just waiting for the right wave. The Kalim Dumidadam. In fact, if you want to make a deal, we can go in the other direction as we now turn to the top of the next Amud. So Ma Adam de Bein and Kavana of Kalim Nami de Kamechavin Lehu de Kamechavin Lehu Adam. So just like the person has Kavana, the Kli also has Kavana as well. We don't mean the Kli has Kavana. We mean that the owner of the Kli now is saying to himself, I, with intent, am going to have this kli go in the mikvah. Now, v'chitem abiyoshev metzapa ma'la meimra. So the Gemara says, now, if we're right in our pshat in this Mishnah Mikvos, where what could have been the chiddush kavana? No, that's not the chiddush. You need kavana. So if you need kavana, so then what's the chiddush? So that I ketovel in a wave of an ocean that's 40 sa'a, and I need kavana, so where's the chiddush? So the Gemara says, I'll tell you where the chiddush is. So the Gemara says that there could have been two concerns. We could have envisioned that there were two gzeres that one could have made in order to say that toveling in the wave, in the detached wave, is no good. One concern, says the Gemara, is rainwater flowing from some sort of incline. If, let's say, I have rainwater where it flows at an incline, so even though it's coming from a source of 40 sa'ah, so that's no good. If you take a look at the top Rashi, second Rashi, I should say, Zerim Geshamim Mekalech Minahar B'Koach. So you have some sort of stream of rainwater coming down a mountain, Ein Tov Lembo, Da'anitzok V'akatapresh Eino Chibor, V'lo Havei Mikvah Dar Baim Sa'ah, Sharei Ein Mem Sa'ah B'Makom Echad. We know that there is connectivity in mikvaos, but not for rainwater where it is a flowing stream. In other words, once the stream is flowing, once the rainwater is flowing, so there is no halachic connectivity between the flow and where it's coming from. And so therefore, assuming that the flow itself does not have 40 sa'ah, the afa pishiesh harbe lamata ulamala hakatani nechibur. But nevertheless, though, by rainwater, there is no connectivity when it's flowing, and so therefore it's no good. So now, if that's the halacha, which it is, so then one can easily envision that the Chachamim would have made a gzerah, don't tovel in the wave, in the crashing wave, because the next step would be that someone's going to just say to himself, what's the difference between this and the rainwater flowing down the mountain? Is the same thing, right? And so therefore, that could be one possible gzerah.
Rainwater as opposed to mayan, if your water comes from a spring, is acceptable, no? As a mikvah.
Oh, that, in other words, in the spring itself, it's acceptable. We're talking about where there is a...
There cannot be a waterfall.
Right.
Waterfall is not acceptable, even if it's from mayan.
I'm not sure about all the details, but I give you the basic ideas. Okay, additionally, another concern, says the Gemara, is keeping. In other words, what's the keepin? The keepin is the top of the wave, like the arch of the wave. The word kippah is the arch. We're talking about the arch of the wave. In other words, it's a really interesting idea, and that is that yes, you can tovel in a mikvah, and yes, you can tovel in a wave, but the wave has to be grounded. In other words, there has to be some connection between the water and the ground. But if you are throwing something up into the arch of the wave, now again, a visualization over here is really important, and a picture over here is really important. But for our purposes, let's just assume it's the easiest way to say it. Let's just assume right now that we're talking about where it's mid-air. So even though the water's there, and let's even say there's a requisite amount, but because it's mid-air and it's not grounded, so then it's no good. And so once again, I can easily envision a gzera to be made that the crashing wave is fine, but the wave while mid-air is not good, so the gzera could easily have been, well, don't tovel in the crashing wave, because then the next step would be to tovel in the air, in the wave while it's mid-air. So there are two chidushim in the Mishnah. Even if you want to leave kavana off the discussion, out of the chidush department, still there are two gzeras that one could have imagined the chachamim making. And the point of the Mishnah is that the chachamim don't make either gzera.
I think there are 3 points here. One is kavana, one is koach, and one is the procedure has to be done right.
Okay, fine. All that's true. The Gemara is just simply saying that kavana doesn't have to be the chiddush. Now, how do I know this? So, okay, fine. And then the Gemara quotes another Mishnah. It's not a Mishnah, actually. It's a Tosefta. But in any event, the Tosefta tells us that in order to tovel, the water has to be grounded. The water cannot be in the midair, as we explained just a moment earlier. Now, chulin not requiring kavana. Where could be a source for that? So did not. So we learned now a Mishnah. Mishnah Machshirin, also discussed back in Chagiga as well. Perishon afal esoch amas amayim upashat amish yadav temeos venatlan yadav taharus uperos enam b'chiyutan. Okay. There are 2 points to consider over here. The person now, with his hands that are tame. Now, stam yadayim, hands in general, once we have diverted our attention from our hands, are going to be tamei midrabanan. How do you remove the tama? So you could do one of two things. You could take your hands and put them in a mikvah. Okay, you don't always have a mikvah available. Or you could take a kli, fill it with a revius of mayim, and pour that over your hands. Now that's, of course, what we're more used to hearing because that's what we all do. Right? We go to a sink, we take a kli, we fill it with water, and we wash our hands with that, and that is how you remove the tamei midrabanan off of your hands. The Mishnah Machshirin over here describes a scenario where this person with his tummy hands is now going to a canal and sees fruit in the canal and puts his hands into the canal in order to take the fruit. Now, if he... So there are two cases in the Mishnah. So let me go back to the beginning. Let me read the Mishnah once again. So his hands were tummy, uvinatlan. And he takes the fruit. Yadav taharos operos inan b'chiyutan. You see, vis-a-vis his hands being tahor, good. I had no kavana. His only intent was to grab the fruit from the canal. That's fine. In other words, but his hands, nevertheless, received a tahara. Because, again, the idea over here is that even though there was no kavana, your hands are going to be tahor. The assumption over here is that his hands being tahor is not for the purpose of kachin, but rather for the purpose of chulin. And even though it was bali kavana, still it's going to be fine. However, what about the fruit? Becoming mukhshar l'kabel tuma. So this point we've seen and we've already said over numerous times in this Masechta alone. And only time that food becomes tame when it's mukhshar l'kabel tuma. It not only has to come into contact with liquid, but in a manner in which you wanted it to come into contact with liquid. Without your ratzon, the fruit is not mekabel tuma. It's not mukhshar l'kabel tuma. So the imbishol sheyutchu yadav taharos uperos b'chiyutan. Now, if you wanted to wash your hands, so that means that you want that liquid, and therefore, because you're wanting that liquid, so not only your hands are going to be tahor, but on top of that, the fruit are also going to be mukhshar l'kabel tuma. So what we have just learned together clearly is a Mishnah that it gives clear indication that for chulin there does not have to be kavana. Eitzvei Rav l'Rav Nachman. So now, quickly, we're going to run through a number of Mishnayos in Chagiga, which would seem to indicate otherwise. So, if let's say you tovel in the mikvah, where you say to yourself, this tefillah is going to work so that I can eat chulin. Sounds like I need kavana. So, no, if it's just chulin alone, I need no kavana. The point of the Mishnah is that even though I was somewhat mindful going into the mikvah, thinking about how I'm going to eat chulin when I come out of the mikvah, nevertheless, that's it. You are kept only at chulin. You cannot eat a food with any more kedusha. I'm going up the levels of kedusha. Not meiser sheni, not truma, not karbon. Now tava v'lo huchsa kilo lo tava. Now the Mishnah Chagiga says that if you tava with no intent whatsoever, it's like you didn't tava. So my love kilo lo tava klal lo kilo lo tava la meiser aval tava lo chulin. Now the Gemara says no. What it means with no intention is that it's not that the tefillah was a zero. The tefillah worked just for anything that's non-carbon, non-truma, non-meister sheni, meaning chulin, but that's it. Now, who's tavered dechuy kamatri? Now, he thought at that point in time, you're just, right now, you're just pushing me away. meaning you don't really believe that that's the pshat in the Mishnah. Nafak dak v'ashkach, but then he did more research, and what he discovered is that in fact was exactly the pshat in the Mishnah. Detanya tavav lo huchsuk motel lechulam v'asol lemaiser, that you tavav with no intent whatsoever. From that point going forward, you can eat chulin. Because for chulin, you don't need kavana. The asal ha-meiser, and you cannot eat meiser. Meiser here being meiser sheni. Okay. So what we have so far now is a number of mishnayos and brises that we learned together, that for chulin, you do not need kavana. This is supportive of the shita of Rabbi Nasan. It's also that for shita, you don't need kavana. Supportive also for the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda Merav. When a woman tovels in the mikvah with no kavana whatsoever, muteris labesa, she could be with her husband. Ah, it's chulin, you don't need kavana. But she can't eat truma because for the consumption of truma, for that you need kavana. So really interesting where we have been spending a good part of our morning discussing that for one tefillah in a mikvah, so it's good for chulin, but that same tefillah, however, will not work for truma because for truma, you're lacking the kavana.